In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. My name is Trey Farrow. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today, only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Hopefully by now, you've downloaded that radio.com app. If not, what are you waiting for? Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. Yes, I'm harping on that again. Trust me, get the app, you'll thank me. As Dave perfectly led us into our program today, our focus is on preparation for Hungerthon Day on Tuesday. Now, we've had discussions in the past on this program that have covered a lot of different areas, talking about hunger, poverty, some of the issues surrounding it, some of the work of Why Hunger as an organization. We've talked about Hungerthon. You've heard some things about hunger and poverty in discussions on WFAN leading up to our broadcast today. You'll be hearing an awful lot more between now and Tuesday, and during the day on Tuesday. There's a whole lot of things that are going to be taking place here. But I like to start as simply as possible. I'm pleased to say in studio with us is Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. It's nice to see you again.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you once again for hosting us.
You're welcome. I always enjoy our discussions. You know, it's very interesting because I'm going to take folks behind the scenes here. You and I were making sure you had some refreshment.
Well hydrated.
To start the program. And we're walking into our kitchen area, talking about Hungerthon. One of the observations you made was that the Hungerthon campaign started back in 1975.
That's right.
And as you were saying that, the thought hit me, which hit me earlier this week, and then you said it, of 1975. Think how long ago that was. Why are we still talking about this? And where the heck are we in terms of hunger and poverty today? That's some of what we're going to explore here. When I say hunger in 2018, what are we seeing? What's really taking place?
So in terms of the numbers, mm-hmm. we know that there are approximately 40 million, and these are, of course, the folks that we're able to capture data for. There are 40 million Americans, including more than 12 million children in this country, that that are food insecure, that may not get enough food to eat throughout the week. That's one out of every eight of us, one out of every six children that you pass by on the street is dealing with hunger. It's something that's not necessarily visible in this country in the ways that it might be visible in other countries, and yet it surrounds us.
So literally, on that subway car that I was on this morning, there were, I think I counted, 17 people on the car.
Right. So about at least two of them were struggling with hunger.
And that's the reality that I think when you stop and really look at the numbers and put this in a real-world perspective is the sort of information that blows you away. And it blows us away from the standpoint of how can this really continue to be happening?
Well, Why Hunger believes that hunger is a solvable problem,
mm-hmm.
and that it is something that we could probably in the next year end, particularly in this country, if there were the political will to do so. Hunger is a symptom. It's not. It's really when you cast hunger as the sort of center of the story, then your response is, oh, well, food. We need mm-hmm. to distribute food. And that is critical. There are people that need food, and we have more than 60,000 food pantries across this country that are feeding people every day, and that's really critical. And food isn't the answer. Poverty is the problem. Poverty is the problem. And it's economic justice. It's living wages. It's everyone having an opportunity to earn a fair wage in order to feed their families. Nobody wants to go to a food bank or a food pantry. There's not a lot of dignity in that. And yet there are, and you'll hear from one of our partners later on in the show, in Brooklyn, New York, that is really turning the soup model kitchen, flipping the switch basically on the soup model kitchen and really engaging folks with a tremendous amount of dignity. And that's so critical. That's important. And if we're going to end hunger, we really have to dig down to the roots.
So if we're digging down to the roots, how do we get started?
Well, I think that, number one, we can begin to really advocate for a living wage. We know that of the 42 million Americans that rely on food stamps, that more than half of them are working full-time but still not able to make ends meet. So advocating for a living wage and enacting that, whether you're a corporation and you can do it without the political mandate, or whether we need a political mandate to lift lift us above the poverty wages of, $7 to $8 an hour, which is our current minimum wage, you just can't feed yourself on that.
No, you can't.
Much less a family, a family.
How do people do that? I mean, how do they exist?
They rely on food banks. And they rely on what we call SNAP, our food stamp program, which is a supplemental nutritional assistance program. And they routinely skip meals. Parents will skip meals so that their children can eat, or they'll eat less, or they'll cut back on other costs. But the problem is that there are so many fixed costs, right? I mean, you can't really cut back on transportation to work. You can't make decisions about heat and medicine, and people do, Food is probably one of the easiest things to that we have the most control over in terms of our budgets, and particularly for a family who's struggling, and so cutting back on meals or eating less or eating less, you know, poor quality food. Fast food is cheaper than having a healthy meal, and those kinds of decisions come into play, and those are the decisions that folks are forced to make.
Mm. And then we get into this area that you mentioned, the number of children. Children!
Right. Yeah, so there are approximately 12 million children and that are classified, the USDA counts as food insecure. And that's one in six that live with this reality. There are more than 13 million children currently in this country that live below the poverty line. And the poverty line is abysmally low as well. And typically, most folks, when they're looking at who actually is living in poverty, they're judging it at about 180% of the federal poverty line. So it's really our measurements are particularly troublesome as well. And if we were to change those, we would find that in fact there are more. Many more children living in poverty than we're aware of statistically. The other thing is that we have seniors. So it's not just children, but right. Children, seniors, and these are the most vulnerable folks in our society in many ways. And we have an obligation, a right, a moral obligation. They have a right to have an opportunity to grow up and live a full life of self-determination and dignity, and that is something that our society, we believe at Why Hunger, that our society needs to collectively make happen.
Mm. Is it frustrating that we continue to have this issue?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I mean, we believe that hunger is solvable, and we believe that it is complex. It's not as simple as as just, you know, lifting folks, you know, I don't know, paying folks or giving folks a sort of direct economic assistance, mm-hmm. or raising the living wage. Those are really critical pieces. So yeah, it is frustrating, and it is it's solvable at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we look at hunger and think about the work of an organization like Why Hunger, how does Why Hunger, I guess, work with these different community organizations? Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in the past. There's so many organizations around the country and in this city, and sometimes in what some people might view as obscure parts of the country that are working at a grassroots level.
Right.
First of all, how do you find them?
How do we find them? We've been doing this work for since, you know, early 70s. Why Hunger has around the country and globally. And so those organizations are relationships that we've built over the years. Mm. And so we get to know them through those relationships, and relationships are really core to the work that we do and the kind of partnerships that we establish. And the kinds of grassroots organizations that we're working with are really, in we think, the heroes of this story. They are the ones that are on the front lines dealing with this every single day and doing it in a way that is resonant within their own community, fits the context of their particular community, and it could be a variety of different things. It could be simple food distribution. It could be gardening. It could be urban farming. It could be advocacy work. It's a whole host of different skill sets that are really being harvested and employed to help stem the tide of food insecurity and hunger in communities at the community level. And so Why Hunger helps to resource those efforts. We help to knit them together into what we hope to become eventually a kind of the fabric of a social movement, mm-hmm. in this country that is not just calling for an end to hunger, but actually living our way into that future and really trying out those different solutions and making them work at the local level so that we can begin to scale them up.
Are you seeing successes on the parts of that effort?
Yes, we're seeing a lot of success. It is, much of that success is, you know, is sort of piece by piece. Mm-hmm. And the real work, I think, comes in bridging that, in amplifying those into something that's louder than a single community and a single grassroots organization. And that's where Why Hunger comes in, to help really build those alliances and to amplify those voices.
Okay. We're going to be talking more about the work that Why Hunger does. You know, it's part of an effort to motivate people to get involved as part of this effort to end hunger, end poverty, and yes, to be a participant in Hungerthon. We'll get into talking about Hungerthon, some of the things that will be featured on Tuesday around that. Also talk about some of the items that are up for auction as well. Ways that you can be directly involved in this, because this is an answer to the person who's listening to us and says, well, wait a minute, what can I really do about this? Okay. Literally, we want to reach out to you today and talk about exactly how it is that we draw you into this conversation and into it from the standpoint of some, not necessarily reaction, but being proactive in a way in moving to address this too, all as part of a partnership, because that's what we're really talking about here. And if you want more information on some of the things we're talking about, you can also go to hungerthon.org. We will give you other resources as we continue in our discussion. Allison Cohen is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. She is with us on our program. We roll until 7:30 this Sunday morning.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
My name is Bob Salter. We are in studio talking about the work of Why Hunger. It's in preparation for Hungerthon, which is taking place in an official capacity on Tuesday. Realistically, Hungerthon is running through the month of November, through the month of December. You can get information at hungerthon.org. You can make donations. You can bid on auction items as well. In studio with us is Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs at Why Hunger. She shared some information with us on kind of giving us the current state of where we are with hunger in this country in the first portion of our discussion. In just a little bit, we're going to be joined by a guest from a local organization as well. Let's talk about Hungerthon from the standpoint of somebody who's listening to our discussion who, and I know this is going to seem like a foreign concept, somebody who's never heard of Hungerthon before, all right? And those people who have, how do you describe what Hungerthon is?
So Hungerthon, it's a campaign that Why Hunger launched in 1975. It's an annual Thanksgiving radio tradition, and it's a way that we are enlisting artists, radio personalities such as yourself and a whole variety of folks to help us raise critical funds to support communities across the U.S. and also an opportunity for us to really build awareness about hunger and poverty in the U.S. It's an opportunity for us to come together really across the country through radio, through the fans and the listeners, and to come together and take action and really to collectively fight for the right to nutritious food for everyone.
And, you know, I was saying that before about somebody who's listening and they think, what can I really do about this? Okay, this is a really big issue, big problem. As an individual, what difference am I going to make in this?
Yeah,
what do you say?
Well, there's a variety of things that you can do. The simple, easiest thing that you can do is to go to hungerthon.org and really get involved in this campaign and make a donation, or we have some amazing gifts that you can also receive for your donation, that you can bid on items, so you can contribute financially. That is one thing that you can do. You can also commit to really building your own awareness about hunger and poverty in the U.S. and why it exists. And at whyhunger.org, also hungerthon.org, both websites, we have plenty of information and stories and details about the communities that we work with across the U.S. and around the globe that are on the front lines of this issue every single day. You can also look for those community-based organizations in your neighborhood, in your community, in your town, in your city that are on the front lines and support them directly. You can volunteer with them. You can get engaged in a variety of ways. But we talk about the simplest way is to donate, to support the efforts to end hunger by through your pocketbook. Mm-hmm. We also talk about volunteering and getting engaged. We talk about advocacy, which means joining campaigns that will help to lift people out of poverty, that are really calling for a stronger political will to end hunger and poverty. So there's education, advocacy, volunteering, donating, learning. There's much you can do to really engage around this issue.
When we talk about hunger and talk about, communication, this whole process, the technology today, a lot of people are focused on social media. Mm-hmm. Okay. How has that helped or how has it impacted your ability to kind of deliver the message that you're delivering? And is that a way of also spreading the message?
Absolutely. I mean, Why Hunger has a Facebook page. We use Twitter. We have, a variety of different, we have a blog. We have a variety of different ways in which we're able to spread this message, and we can do it quickly. It's you have that sort of, that mecca that you're looking for, which is to go viral on mm-hmm. a particular issue and on a particular thing. So that's another way that you could also get involved, is to really help spread the message through your own Twitter feeds and your various social media, Facebook, and even Instagram, and there are other kinds of social media platforms that we're using as well. And I'm beginning to show my age, but Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, yes, and it's important for us for all of us to really engage in the debate and the dialogue and to spread the message and to commit to educating ourselves about the issues and engaging our families, our neighbors, our communities in this issue as well.
Okay. People also like to know when they donate money. Where's the money go? How's this money being used?
Yep. So 88 cents on every single dollar goes directly to our programmatic work. And our programmatic work is supporting directly these community-based organizations around the country that are on the front lines. We invest resources, funding, training, technical assistance. We're really helping to build the capacity of these innovative grassroots organizations on the front lines. We also use the funding to help build alliances and networks so that we're really kind of marching towards this larger well-knit social movement around the country that's calling for an end to hunger and poverty.
Hmm. So it's kind of neat in terms of the many ways in which things network and interact.
Yep.
And also this idea, too, of, with the different community organizations we were talking about earlier, you're, in a way, creating networking opportunities for those organizations, too.
Yep. Yep. So what we call communities of practice. So communities that are coming together to really learn from each other.
Right. That's the whole thing. Right.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. And learn from each other, improve their models, create a greater efficiency in what they're doing because they're not isolated, alone, siloed in a particular area, in their own community, doing their own work, which is really, really critical. But we, I think, as human beings, and certainly as organizations, can't move forward on our own. And this is such a seemingly intractable issue, hunger and poverty, that to do it alone in our own communities is just one piece of the whole puzzle. And that we've got to also, in addition to doing the work in our communities on the front lines, connecting with and networking with and really building something larger than ourselves in order to really dig down to the roots of this seemingly intractable problem and beginning to solve it together.
And then the other aspect of this is, you know, lots of times people will take the attitude or approach that, you know what, government, some entity will solve this for us. You know, I pay my taxes, the government will take care of this sort of thing. The reality is,
we are the government. We forget that. We are the ones who make up that that body that we rely on to ensure that we have a bit of a social safety net. One out of every four Americans uses the social safety net at one point during their lives. That's a lot.
That's a whole lot of people.
Whether it's financial aid to go to college, whether it's school lunch, whether it's, you know, the variety of ways in which we are all of us relying on the structures that we create and vote to put in place. I mean, I think people forget about that. They forget that, in fact, we are reliant on one another. To create these systems that help us all, and that the idea that, you know, that rising tides float all boats, and I think that's critical. It's kind of in our DNA as Americans, and to get back to that sense of we're all in this together, mm-hmm. is although cliche, is I think a critical. A critical thing that we can help each other move towards.
Mm. All right. Well, our guest is on the line to join us in our discussion and is with a community organization. Would you do the honors? And
Yes. I am really pleased to introduce Denny Marsh, who's the executive director of Neighbors Together, which is an organization in Brooklyn that is soup kitchens, been around for, I think, since the 1930s, I want to say, or 1940s. It's been around for quite some time, as I recall. And they're doing some of the most innovative work, really bringing dignity into the lives of folks that use their services. So, Denny, it's really lovely to have you here. Thanks for joining us so early this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
All right, Denny, tell us a little bit more about the origin of the organization and also what kind of area, what part of Brooklyn or parts of Brooklyn are you covering?
Sure. So we haven't quite been around since the 1940s, but we have been around since the early 1980s.
Ooh, I got that wrong.
That was a period of time when a lot of emergency food programs, including emergency food distribution programs like the Food Bank for New York City, emerged in response to a rising level of hunger in very low-income communities across New York City. Neighbors Together was founded in 1982 by a group of actually Catholic nuns who were teachers in our low-income community of Ocean Hill, Brownsville, and Bedford-Stuyvesant at that time. And they got together with a number of community residents to open up a soup kitchen. And everyone who founded Neighbors Together believed that maybe we would need to be around for a year or two, and that the economy would then recover, the social safety net would strengthen, and that, you know, and the need for a soup kitchen in our community would no longer exist. And that was everybody's hope. You know, and so fast forward 36 years later, here we are. Neighbors Together has grown. We've become one of the largest soup kitchens and community centers in central Brooklyn. And the need for our services has really continued. There still is a deep, deep level of hunger and poverty in central Brooklyn that Neighbors Together is fighting every day.
Who is it that's coming to your soup kitchen? Are there people who some might typically think would come to a soup kitchen? And are there also people who are falling in that category we've talked about before of the working poor?
Absolutely. At this point, I would say that, you know, when you spend a day at Neighbors Together, you will see that there is no one face of hunger right now. It is not, we're not necessarily seeing this stereotypical image of people who typically utilize emergency food programs. We're seeing all kinds of people come through our doors in need of a hot meal and a lot of other supports. So we're seeing, you know, we do see a certain amount of homeless New Yorkers, absolutely. But we are also seeing working families, working adults, people with children, teenagers coming in after school, people with college degrees who are really just unable to find sufficient income support to make ends meet right now. So think, you know, it really runs the gamut in terms of the type of people that are coming to places like Neighbors Together.
Interesting discussion that we're having on our program on WFAN. We've gotten into a discussion. We've really just started in our chat with Denny Marsh, who is executive director of Neighbors Together. Denny, we're going to ask you to stick around. We're going to take a pause here and also work in a sports update. We'll come back, talk more with you, with Allison Cohen, from Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, as we continue on our program this Sunday morning.
Radio.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in a discussion on our program on The Fan, talking about Hungerthon, the work of Why Hunger. Of course, on Tuesday, all through the day on WFAN, there will be features surrounding Hungerthon. You will be encouraged to be a supporter of the efforts of Why Hunger. Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, is in studio with us, helping to anchor this program this morning. We are with you until 7:30, and we've been joined in this portion of our program by Denny Marsh, who is Executive Director of Neighbors Together. And Denny had just started talking with us a little bit about the organization. Allison, you wanted to get in a point here?
Yes. So one of the reasons that I invited Denny to join us this morning is I really have a tremendous amount of respect for the model that Neighbors Together has been as employed around leadership development and advocacy. Mm-hmm. And we were talking earlier about how the issue is when you cast the issue as hunger, that you think, well, then food is the answer.
Right.
And I think Neighbors Together is really demonstrating that it goes much deeper than that. And so, Denny, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the advocacy work that you all have done around three-quarter housing and how residents themselves of three-quarter housing and also folks that are coming to the food pantry, the soup kitchen, have organized to really make a big difference in that area.
Sure. Thank you so much for bringing that component of our work into the forefront. I would say that, you know, while providing food and social services, while we know that they are absolutely critical needs, we also know that only providing food and only providing social services is really a response to the systems that create hunger in the first place. It's not actually addressing the root causes of hunger. And so our mission is to end hunger and poverty, and in order to do that, we really believe and know that we have to engage low-income people, people directly affected by hunger and poverty, in the process of creating long-term change and finding long-term solutions. And so Neighbors Together works at the root by, like you said, Allison, offering intensive leadership development trainings and skills for our members to hone their voices and to share their stories with our elected officials and with people in power, so that the voices of low-income New Yorkers are really amplified and seen and heard, so that the policies that impact their daily lives can start to shift. And in terms of our housing work, what we've seen at Neighbors Together is that people are coming in for a hot meal, but when you start talking to people and really uncovering their stories, it becomes very clear very quickly that housing instability, whether it's homelessness or the fear of imminent eviction or the fear of rising rent prices in the housing market right now, housing is really the biggest challenge to stability that low-income people are facing right now. in our city. And so Neighbors Together has really focused our community organizing and policy advocacy work around increasing the availability of affordable housing for low-income people, knowing that when people have a home and a house that is safe and stable and permanent, so many other pieces of their lives fall into place. So that is really where our work has centered. And you mentioned three-quarter houses. Three-quarter houses are a type of housing that we see a lot of in central Brooklyn and in other low-income neighborhoods across New York. These are unlicensed and unregulated houses that really take advantage of low-income people by packing 30 or 40 men or women into a home, charging them all rent and utilities, and really imposing some very difficult situations on them, such as curfews or lack of access to kitchen facilities or bathroom facilities. These three-quarter houses purport to be supportive programs that will ultimately help people get back on their feet and find and secure permanent housing, but they are not that. And so people end up living there in the hopes that for a better life and end up pretty quickly destabilizing and turning to places like Neighbors Together for support. And so we've really started to work on chipping away at the real abuses of three-quarter house landlords and the abuses that tenants experience. And we've had some real success engaging our city council representatives and really raising awareness about this issue. And in fact, last year we passed 5 bills at the city council level that are starting to really improve the conditions of three-quarter houses and starting to oversee them a little bit more. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it's a huge start, and it was a big win for Neighbors Together and for tenants. It was really led by tenants and their voices. And so this is an example of the ways that, you know, when you really start to look at the deeper systemic problems and start to really amplify them and bring them to light, change can really happen. And like you said, Allison, before, it really takes so many people involved to make those changes happen, but it's possible. And it's really gives me a lot of hope to see that type of change start to begin.
And these are the kinds of organizations that Why Hunger is partnering with and sponsoring and learning from, really deeply learning from, and helping to spread that model. We worked with Neighbors Together to produce a publication in our Food Justice Voices series that is a multimedia piece that you can actually go online, whyhunger.org, and search for Food Justice Voices or Neighbors Together, and you will come to this amazing publication that Neighbors Together did with their clients and tenants, and the tenants that have been organizing around these issues, and really put a face to these issues. You can hear their voices directly and describing their stories and where they are, and I just want to underscore that when we think of soup kitchen, we don't think of organizing, of tenant organizing, for instance. We don't think of political advocacy, and this is the kind of work that Neighbors Together does and does so well, and is really helping to be a model for other organizations around the country. And so I just wanted to lift that up.
What does that mean to Neighbors Together to have that kind of support from Why Hunger?
Why Hunger has been such an amazing partner to Neighbors Together. We connected with Why Hunger back in 2011 when Neighbors Together was selected as one of their grantees that year. And typically foundations support their grantees for the duration of time that they're providing financial support to an organization like Neighbors Together. Mm-hmm. We got a one-year grant from Why Hunger, and 7 years later, it's 2018, and we're still connected. And I really think that Why Hunger takes such a holistic approach to supporting their grantees, not just providing financial assistance, but really providing long-term partnership, connections to all types of resources. Why Hunger connected us to a musician a couple of years ago who helped us raise funds for Neighbors Together. I mean, just really amazing support that has come out of this partnership, including some connections to other organizations across the country who are really working on social justice work and really thinking through and developing local solutions to solving hunger and then sharing those across the country. So it's really, you know, a deep and long-standing partnership that Why Offer Hunger, that Why Hunger offers, which I think is really unique and is rare to see in a foundation. And we are so grateful to be connected.
And having that kind of connection, are you able to actually learn from organizations in, let's say, in other parts of the country?
We are. Neighbors Together a couple of years ago actually participated in a project that Why Hunger was piloting, and we connected with a pantry in Indiana, and they visited us and we visited them. And we really learned about, you know, they were doing community gardening, which is something that Neighbors Together was interested in learning more about. And we were doing community organizing and policy advocacy work, which is something that their team was really interested in learning more about. And to be able to visit each other's locations, to fly out and spend a couple of days with each other's staff and learn about the communities that we're serving and the ways that, you know, the models of each of our programs and how they are different but could really learn from one another was really eye-opening for us and for them. And we've maintained a relationship with that pantry. And, I think that that's really, really rare. And it's something that Neighbors Together would never have been able to access or to take on without the support of Why Hunger.
Yep. And interestingly, the organization in Indiana called Mother Hubbard's Cupboard has also begun doing some advocacy work. We call it the Hub.
That's a great name.
Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, but they call themselves the Hub. So the Hub is really engaged now in organizing the folks that come to their food pantry, and organizing around issues that that are important to them, and for instance, beginning to engage in a living wage campaign locally, and that wouldn't have happened without, or wouldn't have happened as quickly without the learning that they were able to do together with Neighbors Together. And so that's the kind of networking and alliance building that we really think is critical to building this movement to end hunger and poverty, and that it's the value of the collective power of grassroots communities is what we want to lift up and what we want to bring to bear in order to really get to the roots of these issues.
What's on the wish list for Neighbors Together, Denny?
Oh, so many things. I think internally as an organization, we would love to be able to provide more organic, local produce, really high quality food for our members who are turning to us for hot meals. Right now, a lot of our food is government funded, and connecting with, you know, farmers or community gardens is difficult in Central Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing on the wish list that would meet like an immediate need for folks. But of course, you know, we have really big wishes. We want housing for all of our members. We want really high quality health care for all of our members. We want people to not need to have to turn to places like Neighbors Together in the first place. And we really would like to put ourselves out of business. We really don't want to have to be here 36 years from now. So our wishes are big, our mission is big, and we can't do it without the support and investment of a lot of people. And so, you know, making donations, coming out to volunteer, really supporting our on-the-ground programs is a huge wish and a gift for us in so many ways.
And Denny, what's the website?
You can find our website at www.neighborstogether.org.
Okay, so that's Neighbors Together, that's all as one word, .org.
Neighbors Together, all one word, .org.
Denny Marsh, Executive Director of Neighbors Together, thank you very much for joining us on our program and providing some perspective on Neighbors Together. Hopefully, your organization can certainly thrive as well. But thank you for providing the insight that you have, and hopefully maybe some motivation for some of the folks listening to us to be supportive of the efforts of Hungerthon. Thank you, Denny.
My pleasure. Thank you both so much.
We will continue in our discussion with Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger. We're talking in advance of Hungerthon Tuesday here on The Fan.
Radio.com.
Has anybody noticed you're hearing more and more references to this radio.com app? You might want to snag this. Just a hint. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. On our program this morning, we are in a discussion with Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, and talking with her about the work of Why Hunger in advance of Hungerthon 2018. As Dave Uram mentioned, on Tuesday, it's Hungerthon Day here on The Fan, and there will be an awful lot of talk about some of the issues that we are touching upon in our discussion, too. And yes, you can be directly involved in this whole process. When we talk about what we're seeing with hunger here in New York City, I guess, Allison, let's turn to you. What is that showing now? What are the numbers showing?
Yeah, so, and this is sort of, I think, good context for following on the conversation we just had with Denny Marsh mm-hmm. about Neighbors Together. There are more than 1.4 million residents in New York City. That's one in six that rely on emergency food programs. And we call them emergency food programs, but it's really not an emergency as in the same way that it was, you know, some 30 or 40 years ago. So that's one in five children. Mm. That's one in five seniors that are relying on soup kitchens and food pantries like the one you heard described by Denny a little while ago. The other interesting, I think, tidbit is that of all the hungry people in New York State, half of them live here in the New York City five boroughs.
That's a frightening thought.
Yeah.
Half of the hungry people in New York City, in
New York State.
New York State, live in the five boroughs of
yes.
New York City.
That's right. Yeah, 50% of all the statistically food insecure folks in New York State, 50% of them live here in New York City. And as I used the term earlier, emergency food programs, that's a term that was coined, some 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. We've been doing food banking in this country for 50 years, and that is a long time to call something an emergency when it's become sort of a way for folks that are working to supplement their. Their groceries, their ability to feed their families.
You know, that idea of food insecurity is something that is really bothers me. This concept of the working poor, I've said before on this program, I feel realistically, I feel it's a crime that people should be in that situation. And I also think of why is it that more people aren't outraged?
That's an excellent, excellent question. And I wish I could give you a direct answer. I think in part, we've done an excellent job of, I think it's not that visible. I think that that's part of the issue too, is that it's not this concept of food insecurity or the state of food insecurity. It's just not that visible. And that's, I think, a piece of the problem. I wish more people were outraged, and I wish more people would engage around this this idea that hunger is solvable, mm-hmm. that we don't have to have hunger in one of the richest countries in the world, that it's and to see that it's not a matter of sort of individual responsibility, that it's really a social responsibility. It's a responsibility we have to each other as human beings. It's a responsibility that we should be holding our government accountable. You know, for this, because we are them, we are the government, and it's, you know, it's not just an ideology. It's really, you know, it's a fact. When you're looking at 42 million Americans that are struggling to get enough food to eat every week.
But the reality is the resources are there.
The resources are there. The resources are there. It is a matter of how we use those resources, how we determine what percentage of our resources we are going to devote to social issues and social problems.
Hmm. When we talk about the types of things, and Dave alluded to them somewhat in mentioning this at the end of his update, the type of things that will be available on Tuesday and are going to be featured, they really run the gamut when you get right down to it. But one of the things that struck me very much when I was looking at the items online, and I told you I've been here since a little bit before 2 this morning, so I've been involved in a lot of different things here. And one of the things that really stands out, and it's on a shirt, and it's also on a knit hat, is that phrase, hunger is a crime.
Yeah, so we're really stepping it up this year.
that really got me when I saw that. And I was sitting here looking at it and thinking to myself, yeah.
Well, and the phrase comes from Tom Morello, who is, you know, with the Prophets of Rage, and he said it one evening at a show, I think. I'm not sure where the show was. I can't remember. But it was a show, and he stood up, and he was talking about this issue. And he said, you know, it's a crime. Hunger is a crime. And so he's kind of generously let us use that that phrase, I mean, to borrow that phrase and to really call it what it is. You know, again, if you don't call it what it is, then you just wind up treating it with food. And this is an issue that goes way beyond food, way beyond access to food. It really goes to the roots of justice, really.
The support of those in the music and entertainment industries, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Well,
because that seems to be a large, you know, that's a large part of what it is you're able to offer at times for auction.
Right. And we often talk about, you know, Bill Ayers, the co-founder of Why Hunger, often says, you know, music's in our DNA as an organization. And that's because Harry Chapin famously was the co-founder along with Bill of Why Hunger. And so ever since day one, we've been engaging with musical artists to help amplify the voices of those that we work with, and to amplify the message that hunger is solvable. And artists like Bruce Springsteen, Tom Morello, Brandi Carlile, you know, the Michael McDonald, the list goes on and on of the musicians over the years that have really lent their voice to you know, to this collective idea that hunger is solvable,
and having the support of Yoko Ono.
Oh, and yes, and of John course, Lennon. Yoko Ono, who's just incredibly generous. She herself experienced hunger as a child in Japan during the war, and ever since then has really been committed to ending hunger among children. That's a huge concern of hers, and so over the last decade or so, she has very generously joined our campaign and has allowed us to use John Lennon's song and help us again collectively imagine that there is no hunger, and it does start with the imagination.
Okay, so the sort of things, if you want to this season give a gift with meaning, can go to hungerthon.org, get involved. The Bruce Springsteen Land of Hope and Dreams pin, John Lennon's Imagine There's No Hunger coaster set, the Imagine There's No Hunger knit hat, Tom Morello Hunger is a Crime hat, Hunger is a Crime quarter sleeve raglan shirt, the 2018 Hungerthon tee, the 2018 Hungerthon hoodie, and something I think is very creative, is an interesting idea, the Why Hunger apron. When I saw that, I thought, what a neat idea, and what a smart idea, especially at this time of the year.
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful apron that is made with made from organic cotton,
mm-hmm.
and carries a part of the important message of food is a right, and it just says clearly on the apron, food, communities, justice, and those three things go hand in hand.
All right, I want to talk about the Why Hunger hotline as well. Let me just mention the fact that we're talking with Allison Cohen, who is Senior Director of Programs at Why Hunger. Tuesday is Hungerthon Day here on The Fan. You can go to hungerthon.org right now or whyhunger.org and get more information on some of the things that we're talking about. You can make a donation literally as you're listening to our program this morning. At 7:30, it's the NFL preview. Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge along after our 8 o'clock update, and Melusis and Deal along with the Football Sunday program after our 9 o'clock update on The Fan. And yes, it's another big NFL Sunday here on WFAN. The food hotline we've talked about in the past here, 1-800-5-HUNGRY.
Yes.
Who calls that?
So we have been running a national hunger hotline for quite some time now, and you can call it at 1-800-5-HUNGRY, and it helps veterans, seniors, families, working people around the country. They call or they go online to find food, and we connect them directly. We have folks that are you get a real person who speaks with you to help you find food in your neighborhood, as well as government programs like food stamps, SNAP, other things like that that you can access. And we've been building this database for quite some time over the last 20 years and it's kind of a monster to kind of continue to add to this and keep it updated, but we work hard at that, and it enables us to provide reliable information to folks that are finding themselves in a situation of maybe for the first time needing to access a soup kitchen or a food pantry or a food bank.
And I hope people were paying attention when you were explaining and you mentioned veterans among the people calling.
Yes, yes, veterans. Increasingly, over the last decade, we've been hearing from more and more veterans and more men, which is we find it a really interesting phenomenon that we've had an increase of male callers. And again, many of these people are working, mm-hmm. And just can't make ends meet. And the fact that someone who served our country in the way that they've served our country is reliant on a private nonprofit to get their food and other services is I think right up there with hunger is a crime.
Mm. Allison Cohen, who is a senior director of programs for Why Hunger, is in studio with us on our program on The Fan at 7:30 this morning. It's the NFL preview. We will continue in our discussion after Dave's look around the sporting world. You right now can go to hungerthon.org or whyhunger.org, find out more information about things we're talking about. You can actually make a donation at hungerthon.org. And this Tuesday, the 20th, is Hungerthon Day here on WFAN. There'll be a lot of special programming that will bring you information. You'll have the opportunity to bid on items as well and be involved, be directly involved in exactly what we're talking about here. If this isn't providing you with some motivation to become part of the discussion, become an active participant, I don't know what would.
Radio.com. BobSalter.com.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in a discussion talking about the work of Why Hunger and Hungerthon. Hungerthon Tuesday is the 20th. And if you want to be involved in supporting the efforts of Why Hunger, go to hungerthon.org or whyhunger.org. You can make a donation literally right now. Allison Cohen is in studio with us. She is Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger and is sharing information. At 7:30 this morning, it's the NFL preview. Sports Edge follows our 8 o'clock update. And after our 9 o'clock update, Melusis and Deal, along with the Football Sunday program, a big NFL Sunday here on WFAN. We have touched on a number of different issues and talking about this whole idea of hunger being solved from the grassroots up in our discussion. Last year with Hungerthon, there was a little over $1 million that was raised, right?
$1.1 million.
Okay, $1.1 million to be exact. Do you, as an organization, do you set goals?
Yeah, absolutely. We do set goals, and we've seen Hungerthon grow every single year since, you know, since we started this radio tradition in 1975. And the need keeps getting bigger as well.
I got to get you something for your...
I know. I don't know what's going on with me this morning.
I was
going
to get you some hot tea before, and I completely forgot about that. Okay.
So I apologize. But yes, we do. We set goals. We would love to get... We would love to raise more than $1 million again this year. That would be a significant achievement. And it wouldn't be an achievement just for Why Hunger. It's an achievement for all of us. We're all in this together, and that's really how we cast this Hungerthon tradition, that it's the listeners, it's the fans, it's the artists, the musicians, the Bob Salters of the world, the radio personalities that are really engaging. We're all engaging together in this effort to advocate for a world without hunger.
At times of crisis, how is Why Hunger involved? You know, I think back to this year, we've had such wild and wacky weather. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the horrible situation that's happening now in California is...
Oh, the wildfires, yes.
It's beyond belief.
Yeah.
But you think back to, you know, what we've had in North Carolina, in Florida, even going back a little bit and talk about the whole situation in Puerto Rico. Does Why Hunger get involved?
We do get involved. We don't get involved probably in a traditional way, in the sense that we're, you know, we're not on the front lines, mm-hmm. but we are working diligently with the partners that we have. For instance, the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. We've been working with them. They are doing some really amazing work, both to make sure that folks are getting what they need on the ground, but also calling attention, even most recently, to the fact that farm workers and other immigrants are in particular, now that we're a couple of months or 4 weeks or whatever it is past Hurricane Florence, that these are the folks that are that we're beginning to see are really really suffering from this in an ongoing way. So we get involved both in the immediate aftermath to provide funding and resources and to also amplify voices, tell the stories. And we also are engaged, for instance, in Puerto Rico. We work with a partner there called Organización Boricua, and they have been, in addition to making sure that people have enough food to eat, they also have been helping to rebuild the local farming system throughout the island there. And we've been supporting that and providing resources and funding for that. And because they're on the ground, these are the farmers that form the organization, they're mm-hmm. in their community. Mm-hmm. The funds that we were able to raise right after Hurricane Maria, we were able to give those funds directly to this organization that on the ground, they were able to get water, to get supplies, and to start farming again almost immediately. And because of the kind of farming they do, they had root crops that didn't, various root crops that were available right after the hurricane, even while the banana trees and the other sort of higher crops mm-hmm. were were destroyed. So, and we also continue to talk about climate change as a critical intersection with hunger, and is something that we need to begin addressing. And we believe that we're seeing folks on the ground, grassroots level, addressing issues of climate change and weather related disasters in ways that go beyond resilience, really, and that are about rebuilding and not just rebuilding, but designing systems that can withstand some of these climate or weather related events that leave people in dire straits.
Gee, do we think climate change is actually really happening?
We do.
Yes. I wonder if we think that's actually really happening at this point, especially with all the evidence that we seem to be having around us almost on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Here too.
Exactly.
Well, when we look at Tuesday, what's that day like for Why Hunger?
It's actually a really exciting, energizing day because we can feel all of the people around the country, particularly around the extended sort of tri-state area, really listening in, tuning in to WFAN and other radio stations as well. And we have the opportunity to talk all day long on the radio and to share the stories of folks that we're working with and to engage folks all day in calling in, making pledges. There are aspects of it that are kind of like a traditional radiothon, and there are aspects of it that are more into our particular century. In other words, website.
Hungerthon.org, perfect lead into that.
Yeah.
Whyhunger.org, both great resources for you to get more information. Also, you can go to hungerthon.org literally right now, make a donation in support of Why Hunger. All day on Tuesday, you'll be hearing information that hopefully is going to motivate you. It's good information that's being shared as well. Allison Cohen, Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also our thanks to Denny Marsh, Executive Director of Neighbors Together, who joined us earlier in our program.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.